Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Are you just waking up at a minute before 11 o'clock? Over 4,000 of you are tracking your sleep with us through WNYC's Clock Your Sleep Project. On this show all month, we're talking about sleep cycles through the life cycle. We've talked about babies and parents' sleep, teens and sleep. Next week, it'll be all about seniors and sleep. So today, we will talk about all those adults in the middle, all of you in your 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, we want to hear from you. We know our data shows that on average, you're getting right around 7 hours of sleep. And from the people who have answered our poll questions, we found that for more than a third of you, work email is keeping you up past your desired bedtime, work email. And maybe that has to do with the fact that over 50% of you, 4,000 people participating in this project, keep your smartphone right next to your bed. So for all you who probably would love to get more sleep but are kept up by children or work or other kinds of stress, worrying about paying the mortgage, paying for college, saving for retirement, taking care of elderly parents, getting up early to go to the gym, or a million other pressures or desires, call us up right now, 212-433-WNYC, with your sleep stories or to ask for sleep advice, 212-433-9692. The question is, what makes you burn the candle at both ends? Tell us what it is. And if you're having trouble cutting something out, is it the email, what they called 10 years ago your crackberry? Haha, how quaint that sounds now, right? But the idea is the same. What term for addiction rhymes with iPhone? Or what else? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Or maybe you're one of those people who engages in sleep bragging. Do you go to work and say, I only got 4.5 hours last night. I'd never get more than 5.5. Do you do that? Do you have an annoying colleague who does that? Does your boss seem to value that as an off-the-books criterion for promotions and raises? 212-433-9692. But bottom line, what makes you burn the candle at both ends? And if you have any questions about how to handle your grown-up sleep life, ask our guests who are about to introduce here at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, sleep cycles through the life cycle on the Brian Lehrer Show all this month. And back with us now is Dr. Carl Bazile, professor of neurology and director of the Division of Epilepsy and Sleep at Columbia University's College of Physicians and Surgeons. Welcome back, Dr. Bazile.
Thanks, and thanks for having me again.
And joining us for a few minutes is Russell Sanna, Executive Director of the Division of Sleep Medicine at the Harvard Medical School. He's working on sleep health policy standards for companies. He'll explain how those could help you get better sleep and also help the bottom line for businesses, or so he wants them to think. Ha. Russell Sanna, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
So, Dr. Bazile, how much sleep does the average adult really need? We know that teens need a lot, but can't grown-ups get away with less?
Well, everyone thinks they can. The statistics that most sleep experts believe is that the average adult needs about 8 hours of sleep. Now, there is a range there. Some people function perfectly well on about 7 hours of sleep, but there are other people that really require 9 hours of sleep to function at their best. And that's especially true when you talk about a chronic period of time. So the body can adapt to one short night of sleep relatively easily. But if you do that throughout the work week, what you end up with by the end of the work week on Friday is what we call accumulated sleep debt. So if you really need 8 hours, cheating to seven isn't a big deal on Monday night. But by the time you get Friday, you're sleep deprived.
So, Russell Sanna, part of your mission, I see, is to reinforce that sleep is the third pillar of health, along with diet and exercise. And you want companies to reinforce that. Tell us how.
Well, as we've been talking about all week, first of all, congratulations to WNYC for making sleep such a huge priority this month. That is exactly the kind of public conversation we need to have more and more in this country to address what the Institute of Medicine all told us in their report 2006, that we have a major epidemic here. It's something that is not biologically contagious, it's sociologically contagious. We have a set of cultural norms that reinforce sleep deprivation. So to counter that, we are looking around for where are the best change agents that can take on this. And if you look at American corporations to begin with, not to exclude everybody else, but they have three bottom lines that coincide with our interests around sleep health, things that are directly impacted by sleep health and sleep deprivation: productivity and its counterpart presenteeism, healthcare costs, and safety. So working out strategies with American corporations to address those three bottom lines, we are hoping to create a set of standards through these partnership organizations that can make the work world and by extension the home life to become circadian smart. That is, when you start talking about ubiquitous connectivity that's developed, it's akin to the same major impact that the light bulb had for our circadian rhythms way back when Thomas Edison brought that to our world. We're losing the boundaries between work and home, between light and dark, between sleep and wake. And so these standards are an attempt to sort of reintroduce those parameters throughout company operations with things like connectivity, with things like travel schedule, with things like the cultural aspects. When you talk about people being very proud of their sleep deprivation, that's exactly the kind of cultural transformation that needs to take place. Sleep health is a business issue because of the cognitive performance aspects that are directly related to when you come into work and when you are trying to work remotely as well.
So
I don't want to get lost in all of the details, but that's what we're up to.
Let's hear a sleep story from Jeff in Midtown. Jeff, you're on WNYC, and do I see you're a small business owner?
Yes, I'm a small business owner, and I'm constantly plagued by email and data and details. I manage a number of people and departments, and so it's a 24/7 activity if I let it be a 24/7 activity. So any questions you might have of me, I'm very aware of the digital drama that we all go through, because now we have not only smartphones but multiple devices that demand our attention.
Right. So never mind the employee asking for some relief from the company. You're the owner, and you can't get away from your devices. So, Dr. Sena, this sounds right up your alley. Do you want to ask him anything, as he invited you to, or do you want to give him some advice?
I've actually gone into this quite deeply in order to modify my own behavior.
Uh-huh, Jeff.
I don't leave my cell phone charging in my bedroom, number one. Okay, I make sure it's in a separate place in the house, and mm-hmm. I turn the ringer off so it's only on vibrate. I sort of self-impose a no phone space for a period of time that I need to sleep, because mm-hmm. if I don't get enough sleep, then I'm not functional the next day. I can't.
Correct.
I'm one of those people that needs 8 hours of sleep.
And so, Jeff, is this working for you? Do you consider yourself a success story in managing your digital life now, even as a business owner with all these pressures?
No, I'm quite fallible, like all of us. I do get addicted to, issues that need to be solved.
Sure.
And so, like last night, I spent a good deal of time on my iPad just finishing up emails, catching up on emails, because I'd be out of the office today. And then I turned it off and went to sleep.
And just one more. I'm just going to do one more. It's just going to take me a minute. And then 6-7 minutes later, that other one just came in. It's mm-hmm. just going to take a minute. Dr. Sena? Your reaction.
That's quite often the case. Well, we can look to companies like Johnson & Johnson, who's now instituted email-free weekends as an attempt to message to their employees that they value the employees' time with their families and offline so they can regenerate and restore and come to work and be 100% at work. When we spend all our time on email, as your guest is indicating, you tend to be sort of addicted to it and can't say no to it. So sleep is something that in the society we do after we finish everything. We need to change that. We need to set our alarm clocks to go to bed, not to wake up.
Eli in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Eli. Eli, you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, turn off your radio so you're not confused by the delay.
Okay.
And tell us your sleep story.
So I work for a startup based out of Brooklyn, New York. I live in Manhattan, and I commute to Connecticut every day because that's the only place we have distribution. It's a brand-new beverage product.
Uh-huh.
And I have, I spend 12 to 15 hours in Connecticut going to different stores and restaurants. Then I get home, and I have another 3 to 4 hours of paperwork I have to follow up with, tracking my day, making sure my managers are updated. And, then I go to sleep for a couple hours. I wake up in the morning. I still have stuff to update, and I have to catch up on emails, planning different tastings. And
A couple of hours, like two?
I would say on average five. Mm-hmm. On a good night, but it really depends. It's just, sometimes on the weekends I get sleep, but doing a startup, you really don't have enough daylight. And then at nighttime, you don't have enough nighttime. So it's hard. It's really hard to get the required, quote unquote, 8 hours of sleep, but I seem to be functioning okay.
Maybe you should move to Connecticut.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be in New York City within the next month.
Oh.
And so, we're going to be in Brooklyn and New York and obviously
distributing in both places. So,
exactly.
Dr. Sanna, I don't know if there's any advice for somebody in Eli's position.
He's probably in a very under the gun, and startups are unusual, but we also know that when people need to pay attention to not just sleep but work practices, if you look at the work of Leslie Perlow at the Harvard Business School, that is a tremendous component of what goes on around sleep deprivation. So companies are now instituting sort of email-free days, they're meeting-free days. They're really examining how work is actually getting done, because with the technology that we have available, we have options to reformulate how we communicate with each other, how the work is actually getting done. So those are two conversations that needed to take place at the same time, and that's exactly the kind of thing that we're looking for companies to work with us on to be able to generate best practices and case studies that demonstrate how you can do both sleep health and efficient business operations at the same time.
And Eli, good luck out there. So Dr. Bazil, is sleep getting worse for adults? I mean, just because we didn't have email in the past, there was still work stress, worrying about a meeting, fretting over the next step in your career. Is sleep actually worse now? I mean, anxiety has already existed way before the digital world.
Well, I think there's definitely a difference, and there is a worsening because of it. The body is designed to deal with crises. I mean, and sleep is designed that you can do without it if you really have to. The brain works that way, and otherwise, we wouldn't be able to function in life. But I think the bigger problem is, going back to the two callers, there are things that are real crises in life, and an email is not. But what happens is you open your email, it's bedtime, and it's something that you feel is really important. It probably isn't, but that has the capacity to keep you up later and later. Whereas before email, you weren't going to get mail at 11 o'clock at night. You might get a phone call, but people didn't really do that. It's just the easy availability of just another signal that there's something to do, and that's the problem with email.
Dr. Carl Bazil stays with us, professor of neurology and director of the Division of Epilepsy and Sleep at Columbia University's College of Physicians and Surgeons. We thank Dr. Russell Sanna, executive director of the Division of Sleep Medicine at the Harvard Medical School. Dr. Sanna, thank you very much. Very valuable contributions.
Thank you. Carry on the good work.
And we welcome in, and thank you, PJ Vogt, a producer of WNYC's On the Media and co-host of their podcast and blog, TLDR, who joins us for a couple of minutes now. Hey, PJ.
Hey, Brian.
So you've been tracking your sleep with our Clock Your Sleep project. What have you learned?
I've learned something that I suspected, which is that I'm a terrible, terrible sleeper. Like, I guess it sounds like everybody else. I've also learned that tracking your sleep is a good way to feel like very anxious and like you never sleep and to sleep even worse.
Yeah. So this, Dr. Bazile, is, I guess, the catch-22 of the whole enterprise that we're engaging in here. I shouldn't even probably say it out loud. But by asking people to track their sleep with us, is it possible that we're making them more anxious about their own sleep and creating the conditions for them to get less sleep?
I think that could be a problem. I mean, in sleep medicine, we do it all the time. We ask people to track their sleep and hope that it will, number one, show them what their patterns are, show them, you know, what they might be able to improve on and ultimately make them better. But if it's producing anxiety, well, that may be a problem. And I guess it depends on what the anxiety is about. Is it that you look at your sleep and you go, oh, I've only gotten 4 hours last night. I'm in big trouble. And now I'm going to worry about it and not get more, and not be able to get to sleep.
And never mind this little project that we're doing. That's the problem for insomniacs everywhere, right? Is that once people realize they have a chronic sleep problem, then they're thinking about it every night when they're trying to get to sleep. PJ, is that part of your problem?
Oh, it is definitely part of my problem. I mean, I think normally I get by on about 6 hours and it feels okay. I'm not like operating heavy machinery or anything like that. But yeah, since we started, I've had a lot more anxiety around it. I've basically just started relying more on sleeping pills because it's sort of a way to just turn that anxiety off chemically, which doesn't feel like something a doctor would necessarily support.
Do you want to say what you take?
Oh, yeah, just over-the-counter like Benadryl type stuff. But it has worked so much so that my car was towed yesterday morning because I slept through my alarm because the Benadryl worked so well.
Oh, so that's the too little sleep leading to too much sleep, which leads to missing your alternate side of the street parking deadline.
Exactly.
Dr. Bazile, this is the story of America in a nutshell.
Well, it's certainly one story of America, and that's not just, you know, work-related and related to tracking your sleep. That is, as you said, insomnia. It's some trigger that you experience when it's time to go to bed that alerts you rather than allows you to relax. And, you know, then you come to somebody like me or to a sleep therapist who's got to teach you how to stop that reaction. Sleeping pills are one way to do it, but not necessarily the best.
Do you have a take as somebody who advises people on sleep, you know, in general, on sleep medications?
Well, in terms of my advice, I usually start with behavioral techniques. I mean, you have to work with your own body, figure out what is going to relax you, and if it's tracking your sleep, looking at the night's sleep before, right, you know, your last night's sleep when you only got 4 hours, you know, don't do that. You have to, you know, schedule some time, a relaxing activity before you go to bed so you're able to get to sleep. If that doesn't work, then, you know, sometimes sleeping pills can help. They can help to turn off that reaction and ideally to retrain you so you don't get that anxiety reaction, which, you know, further interferes with your sleep.
Maybe, PJ, you need to find some people who are writing to you with emails that are too long so you don't read them and they put you to sleep.
Yeah, a nice, really boring email could put you right out, and then you don't worry about the fact that you can't get to sleep.
PJ Vogt writes the TLDR, figure out what that stands for, blog in connection with WNYC's On the Media. PJ, good luck getting some sleep and getting your car back.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we continue our Sleep Cycles Through the Life Cycle series every Wednesday this month, and Dr. Carl Bazile from Columbia University with us. I have a question for you. Very simple. Which would you have people do? Get an extra hour of sleep or wake up and go to the gym before work because exercise is that important?
That's a tough one. You know, there's and really what we're dancing around here is the demands of life and the demands of health, and that's what everybody has to deal with. So it's an individual decision. Exercise is certainly important, but there will come a point where if you're significantly sleep deprived, then that hour of sleep may be more important. Whereas, you know, if you're basically getting enough sleep, but otherwise you would get no exercise, that's important to you as well, then maybe you should get up earlier. But there's not one answer to that.
Let's hear somebody else's burning the candle at both ends story. Aaron in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, thank you for having me on, Brian. I wanted to just say that one of the coping mechanisms that I personally use is I feel like I have to have my phone near me for emergencies, for other things, but I have an app on my phone that allows me to tailor who can call me and actually silences all of the other bells and whistles that go off so that I can get a restful night's sleep.
That's a good app. That's in the right direction. And Robin in Westwood has another technique that she uses. Hi, Robin. Oh, Robin is a guy. I'm sorry. Hi, Robin.
Yeah, that's quite all right. I get it all the time.
The Robins and the Jodys and the Chrises of the world always, you know, gender.
Yeah, Robin, Leslie, and Dana's, right?
The gender ambiguous. Hey.
Yeah. Well, my wife has she's instituted a no light policy in our bedroom. So she's got blackout curtains. No light is allowed to emanate from phones, from alarm clocks, or anything. And it's amazing because and she's a sensitive sleeper, and that's exactly why she did that. But for me, I find out when I get home late, and I typically get home late in the evening, I'm able to fall asleep actually quite quick, and I stay asleep deeper than prior, you know, when, you know, we had different distractions that were inside the room. So I think just the whole, I guess it's a cocooning or, you know, a primal cave thing or something like that, but it's really great for actually kind of getting it down into very, very deep sleep.
Robin, good tip, the lights. And Erica in Plainview, you're on WNYC. Hi, Erica.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Tell us your story.
I called in to say that I'm a mom of four young children, and I work full-time as a teacher. And the only time I have to myself once homework's done and laundry's done and whatnot is after the kids go to bed, which is around, you know, 9 o'clock. And that starts cutting into my sleep because I want to do things that I enjoy, either socializing or reading, watching some TV. And then I go to the gym early before work at 4. I get up at 4:30 most days. So my desire to have some relaxing time and downtime or time with my husband winds up cutting into my sleep hours.
And Dr. Bazile, how many times have you heard this story? People staying up late not because they're checking that 16th, 17th email since 10 o'clock, but because that's their little respite time at the end of their busy lives, especially when the kids go to sleep.
Oh, I hear it every day, usually several times a day, and they want me to give them the key so they can get by with that 5 hours of sleep. But unfortunately,
right,
it doesn't exist. So it comes down to balancing, you know you need sleep, just like you know you need exercise, like you know you need nutrition, and we all do the best we can.
So what do you do ultimately, Erica? You get by? You limp along?
It's tough. I will say that I'm always tired, and I'm able to get enough sleep that I'm, I think, an effective teacher during the school day. I think my family winds up suffering on the other end because I really need a nap when I get home from work, which at like 2:30. And that just doesn't work because, you know, the kids are getting off the bus and I can't be napping. I think that's the real struggle is the and I need the time to relax also. So
sure.
I think I wind up sacrificing the sleep so that I can do things for
yourself,
myself.
Well, I can give you one upside of that. One thing that you're doing that's good is relaxing, doing something that you enjoy before you go to bed. So at least once you do get to bed, you probably are able to sleep more effectively than if you stayed, you know, jazzed up doing all sorts of things you didn't want to do. And then you try to get to sleep, and you're going to even be more sleep deprived.
Erica,
so that might be an upside of the way you're doing things.
Good luck out there, Erica. And I meant to mention, as PJ Vogt from On the Media was leaving, that we'll be talking to him again soon because he's going to be one of our sleep team leaders as we institute phase two of this sleep project in May, when we'll be doing sleep experiments with WNYC personalities. PJ and Brooke Gladstone will be on what they call Team Vice Squad and cutting out stimulants and other things that we might consider vices later in the day to see if that helps them sleep. We'll have other teams competing against them, as the goal will be to try to add an hour of sleep a night by these WNYC sleep teams. We'll be doing that next month. And Carl Bazile next week when we continue our Sleep Cycles in the Life Cycle series, we'll be talking about sleep and the elderly. So give us a little preview. Is there any truth to the idea that you need less sleep as you get much older?
Well, that's probably not true at all. There are differences in sleep as you get older. One of them is that people don't tend to sleep quite as deeply. They don't get as much slow wave or very deep sleep as they do when they're younger. So they tend to wake up more. When you look at people who are over 65, they will tend to, their sleep will be more fragmented. They'll wake up more often, so they may think they're getting less sleep. But overall, the needs are pretty similar in terms of time.
In our informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific study of people participating in our Clock Your Sleep project, they're all volunteers. That's why it's unscientific. But we found the people getting the least amount of sleep, at least self-reporting the least amount of sleep, are 55 to 65-year-olds, getting an average of 6 hours and 51 minutes. But people who are participating past 65 years old are getting more sleep. Does that match up with scientific findings?
Well, I guess what you may be seeing is that those people in the 55 to 65 age group are probably still working, but they're kind of suffering from the starting point of their sleep being more fragmented. So they may not be able to, you know, shut down as quickly as somebody who's 20 years old and is working just as hard. So on top of, you know, trying to squeeze in your sleep in a 6 or 7 hour period at night, you may have more awakenings during that 6 or 7 hour period. Whereas if you're over 65 and retired, you can give yourself more time, take a nap, and you can get the sleep that you need. But again, that's unscientific. I think it's very exciting that you all are doing this because, while not scientific, it's a very important observational study of what is really going on.
Anecdotal evidence from the WNYC Clock Your Sleep Project. Dr. Bazile, thanks a lot. We'll talk again as this goes on.
Appreciate it.
And listeners, you can still join our Clock Your Sleep Project at wnyc.org/sleep. Coming up next on The Brian Lehrer Show, your uncommon polar vortex indicators. What are you discovering this spring as your property or your neighborhood thaws out from the intense winter? Our Stephen Nesson is going to be here to report on some surprising findings involving rats and mosquitoes and trees, and we want yours. What are you finding that's surprising you as your property or your neighborhood thaws out from the intense winter? Call in right now, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.